The Democrat Party has become too extreme to be trusted with power. Their radical policies are a danger to your family and to your country.
Indeed, they are. Good morning and welcome into the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Welcome to Monday, the 21st of October, 2019. It's good to have you along this morning. Thank you so much for being there. I say this morning because I record in the mornings, but if you're on the podcast, hey, good to have you along. I don't care when you're listening. I'm just glad you're there. Thanks for being there. I hope you had a good weekend. I hope you took some advice from me and unplugged a bit over the weekend and just took some time to smell the flowers, look at the leaves, and just enjoy life. My wife, Jane, and I did that for a little while yesterday afternoon. Our weekend was a bit on the busy side. Jane's weekend was a bit on the busy side. I was around the house piddling, doing things that needed to be done around the house. But my wife took off Friday evening to visit our niece who lives up in Huntsville, Alabama. Niece Laura, who is fighting cancer right now. She's going through chemo, and on her last visit to the doctor, they scanned. It's breast cancer. They scanned and couldn't find anything. So the chemo is working. Chemo and prayers. It's all working. And my wife and her sister, my sister-in-law, Jenny, went to Huntsville to participate. Oh, and also niece Deborah went along to participate in a 5K. I was struggling to figure out what that word was. The 5K in support of breast cancer. And they walked all over the Huntsville area in the 5K Saturday morning, very early. And it was the stories Jane brought back, from what I can tell, it was an absolute hoot because they had a great time. And she was so sore she could barely walk when she came in the door Saturday night. So, see, I don't do 5Ks. I'll watch them. I did a 5K several years ago. The gang from the Scott Dawson Evangelistic Association, we all went down to Disney to participate in a 5K. They call that a 5K fun run, and it was not fun, and not many people were running. But there was also a 10-miler, and some of the staff participated in the 10-miler, and my wife and I participated in the 5K. The finish line was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen in my life up to that point. It was a sight to behold. The sweet Disney person there holding out that medal to put around my neck, and my wife standing there because she had taken off and abandoned me at some point during the race, just left me in the dust. And she walked up to me, and I looked her in the eye and said, I thought you loved me. But I have participated in a 5K, and I don't think I'll be doing that again. I'm a sit in a chair at a computer and talk guy. I'm not a running guy. But that was the highlight of the weekend. And then late yesterday afternoon, just before it started to get dark here, we hopped in the little car, the little project car, the little 1991 Miata, top down, sunglasses on, and took a ride. And it was a thing to behold. We had a great time rambling around the back roads. It was a short ride. We were gone for maybe 45 minutes. We took Princess Kimber, Shaggyfoot, the Wonder Dog, and Princess Kimber had a great time smelling all the different smells that she doesn't get to smell around the house. And we just let the wind blow through our hair and were quiet and just enjoyed the sights and relaxed for about 45 minutes. And it was very therapeutic. It was a good thing. And hopefully you can do something like that. It doesn't have to be in a convertible or a motorcycle or out on a boat. It can be just anything. Just get out, unplug, and be quiet for a little while. That's what's important. And we need to remember what's important, because I got to be honest with you, all of this absurdity in politics, not that important. Really not that important. I mean, yes, our country is very important, but preserving your perspective, your sanity, and your perspective, your honest perspective on life is a lot more important. So you need to unplug from time to time. Okay? All right. Enough about that. What do we have to talk about today? So much stuff I have stacked up here, and I know I will not get to everything. I never do. But we're going to make a valiant effort to get through it all today. Hopefully we can. And we will make a dent in it. Hopefully. So where to start? How about here? Oh, it's about Hillary Clinton. Please allow me to apologize right up front, because it's about Hillary Clinton.
He died.
Oh my goodness. Three outside campaigns are joining forces against the Queen of Darkness, and it is quite a sight. When Hillary Clinton launched a vicious attack against Democratic Congresswoman and presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard, she undoubtedly thought that doing so could destroy Tulsi's campaign, possibly even her career. The reason for Hillary's hatred towards Tulsi was clear from the get-go. As Tulsi herself explained on Tucker Carlson Tonight, she's against everything Hillary represents. She's against regime change wars. She's against a new arms race. She's an outsider, a veteran, rather than a career politician. What's more, she seems to be incorruptible and honest. In other words, she's basically the anti-Hillary. Although it was quite shocking to see just how viciously Hillary attacked Tulsi, there's some good news for the congresswoman, former soldier, other presidential candidates, and or their campaigns are publicly taking her side. Here's Marianne Williamson, another outsider and Democratic presidential candidate who criticized her fellow liberals earlier for treating her less fairly than conservatives do. And not only does Williamson clearly stand by Tulsi, she also blasts her own party in the process. Quote, "The Democratic establishment has got to stop smearing women it finds inconvenient. The character assassination of women who don't toe the party line will backfire." She said this on Twitter. She closed by saying, "Stay strong, Tulsi. You deserve respect and you have mine." This is quite a sight to behold. Democratic women are, correctly and rightfully, pointing out that the supposed feminism of the Democratic Party is nothing but a sham. They aren't women-friendly, they're establishment-friendly, and feminism is nothing but a tool for them to get some extra votes. It isn't heartfelt. It isn't something they actually believe in. Williamson isn't the only prominent Democratic outsider who's publicly taking a stand in favor of Tulsi. The same goes for Nina Turner, national co-chair of the Bernie Sanders campaign. She writes on Twitter, "Good morning, Sister Tulsi Gabbard. I'm just catching up with the foolery that's going on. I'm shaking my head hard. Four words, keep your head up." The surprise support from Turner and Williamson for Tulsi is very telling. They're all outsiders. They're all up against the same machine. And they've all experienced the same bullying Tulsi is experiencing now. Still, it requires courage for them to publicly take a stand. Of course, you and I will disagree strongly with most of their views with regard to politics. But you have to admit, you don't often see this kind of courage in politics. So good on you, ladies. Stay strong, stand tall, keep your heads up. Don't let the Clinton machine put you down. Now, please keep in mind that Tulsi Gabbard is taking an admirable stand for what she's, you know, what this is stance she's taking. She's taking an admirable stand. She needs to stand up to the machine and expose the faux feminism in the Democrat Party for what it actually is. It isn't really feminism. It's political maneuvering. And Hillary has long been an abuser of women who stand against her for any reason. I refer back to the time when she just wasted the women who accused Bill Clinton of the things that he did. She stood up against them. She accused them of all manner of things. She wasn't standing with women. She was standing up for her bread and butter, because she latched herself onto somebody with some political talent who could go the long distance, and she was counting on taking that all the way to the top. I think she knew from the get-go that if she latched her claws into Bill Clinton, that someday she could realistically be the president of the United States. And she's tried twice, and she's failed twice. Because when it gets to the bottom line, she's a very unlikable person. People just don't like Hillary Clinton. They don't like her at all. Oh, and that's not the only story we have about Hillary.
I was alone, yes.
The whole night?
Well, yes, the whole night.
Well, I don't know why that's funny. I mean, did you have any in-person briefings? I don't find it funny at all.
Hillary Clinton's been spreading conspiracy theories in recent days, including a claim that 2020 Democratic presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard is a Russian asset. The former Secretary of State made the comments on the podcast Campaign HQ with David Plouffe. But that wasn't the only conspiracy theory she dropped during that interview. Clinton also claimed that 10-year-olds are hacking our voting systems and the networks that connect them. Quote, you know, we don't really know to what extent the election was interfered in because nobody will look for it. We do know that in Florida, a lot more happened than has been admitted publicly. This is what she said during the podcast. She was referring to the 2018 gubernatorial race in Florida. She continued, we know we're really vulnerable. Every hackathon that happens, 10-year-olds are hacking our voting systems and the networks that connect them. So we have four big problems, and we don't have a government that's interested in protecting our elections, she adds. Well, the Daily Caller reported that Clinton's claim of an 11-year-old hacking the election system came from a story last year that said a boy, according to USA Today, successfully hacked into a replica of the website used by the Florida Secretary of State to report election results, and the boy changed those results. That child and others were participating in a DEFCON voting machine hacking village, where participants attempted to hack into replica websites in order to change their information. The problem with the story, despite media claims it showed the vulnerability of our election system, is that the replica pages didn't feature the same security systems as the real websites, meaning the children came nowhere close to actually hacking our voting systems. PolitiFact rated the claim mostly false when it was made by Tulsi Gabbard a few months before. First, there wasn't hacking into a replica of the election system, but rather a website made to look like Florida's Secretary of State website that reports preliminary action results. In other words, not the system that receives and counts actual votes. And second, what was hacked into was not even a replica, as in an exact copy of the website, because it didn't contain the proprietary security features that the Secretary of State website actually has. As the Daily Caller pointed out, Florida's National Association of Secretaries of State released a statement after the story spread, reading in part, "Our main concern with the approach taken by DEFCON is that it utilizes a pseudo-environment in which no way replicates state election systems, networks, or physical security. Providing conference attendees with unlimited physical access to voting machines, most of which are no longer in use, does not replicate accurate physical and cyber protections established by state and local governments before and on election day. We are also concerned that creating mock election office networks and voter registration databases for participants to defend and or hack is also unrealistic. It would be extremely difficult to replicate these systems since many states utilize unique networks and custom-built databases with new and updated security protocols. While it's undeniable websites are vulnerable to hackers, election night reporting websites are only used to publish preliminary, unofficial results for the public and the media. The sites are not connected to vote-counting equipment and could never change actual election results." So, both Tulsi Gabbard and Hillary Clinton have made a claim which doesn't have any support in the real world. And by the way, I need to add that this is one reason that as much as you may admire Tulsi Gabbard for standing up to Hillary Clinton, she's still a leftist, and she still sees things the way leftists see things. She just doesn't like the queen of all hypocrites attacking her the way she did. But Hillary, once again, is wrong. Conspiracy theory, no support in reality. God love her. But that kind of describes Hillary's life, don't you think? Everything is conspiracy theory and really doesn't have much of a basis in reality. I guess when you lie for a living, it becomes as easy as breathing. And you'll just say anything to convince people to stand behind you, to stand with you, and to help you achieve your goals. How sad that is, huh? Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. It's the Monday edition of the podcast. We're getting things kicked off for another week of absurdity in real life. I guess I say this at least once a week, but I get really tired of the lunacy, don't you? I mean, we keep watching this same dog and pony show play out again and again and again, and it makes me wonder how serious our representatives, the people we send to D.C., really are. I mean, I think we can see that some of them are very serious about larceny. But I again and again, I observe Republicans who are obviously afraid to stand tall, wade into the battle, and make a difference. And that's very disappointing. I think they're very concerned about appearances. Oh, you don't want to attack your fellow member of Congress. Really? Well, if that fellow member of Congress is lying, is abusing the system, is cheating, is trying to railroad a duly elected president out of office based on nothing but lies, don't you think you should stand up for the truth and do something? I think you should. But no, what we see is the rare Republican, supposedly conservative, standing up and speaking out. And it's really a sad thing. When you only have, let's just say, like Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham stands up. Now, for a long time, he played along. For a long time, he buddied up to John McCain. For a long time, he was, I'll play nice with you. He was the let's go all get along guy. And now, he still has that streak, but he stands up because he saw what these people really are and couldn't deny it during the Kavanaugh hearings. So, we can hope that there are more like Lindsey Graham out there who will stand up. Oh, by the way, sidebar, I just remembered there's an article CNN has published that makes it appear that Lindsey Graham is in favor of impeachment. And nothing could be further from the truth. I didn't pull it in for today's mix, but I did see it earlier. I just sort of passed it off. I really honestly didn't see myself talking about Lindsey Graham. Otherwise, I would have brought it in. But the CNN headline makes it appear that Lindsey Graham is open to impeachment. But when you actually dig into the article, maybe a little bit farther than most of your liberal friends would, you actually find out that what he's saying is, well, if there's compelling evidence put forth, real compelling evidence put forth of a crime being committed and a reason to impeach, well, yes. And I think you would agree, would you not? I know I would. If there were compelling evidence put forward that Donald Trump had done something, had committed a crime, had actually transgressed so severely that impeachment was the answer, yes, impeachment is the thing to do. Otherwise, what we're watching is nothing more than political theater. And speaking of political theater, bless our hearts, there's more on this whole Hunter Biden story. Now, I've mentioned a couple of times that there have been a couple of figures passed around. People said he was paid $50,000 a month. You do the math, that's a lot of money. That's $600,000 a year to be essentially a consultant on a board. Somebody who doesn't have final decisions. He just makes recommendations. Well, it apparently was much more than that. Hunter Biden, according to The Blaze, was reportedly paid much more to serve on the board of Burisma Holdings, one of Ukraine's largest natural gas companies, than originally believed. This is according to Reuters. They reported this on Friday. A businessman, former member of Ukrainian parliament who knows Burisma's founder, who's named Oleksandr Onyshenko, I'm just going to go with that, told Reuters that Biden was hired to protect the company at a time when it faced potential criminal prosecution. He was hired, quote, as a helpful non-executive director with a powerful name, the report said. At the time of Biden's hiring, Mykola Zlokchevsky, the former Ukrainian Minister of Natural Resources who founded Burisma, was being investigated for corruption, tax violations, and money laundering. So Hunter Biden was hired because he had the Biden name, and he was put in place because of his contacts to protect someone who was being investigated for corruption, tax violations, and money laundering. Exactly how much Hunter Biden was paid for his advisory services has become a central issue. Records obtained by Reuters show that Biden received much more than $50,000 a month, the original figure that's been reported. National Review reports, Reuters reviewed payments records allegedly from Burisma, which show $3.4 million in payments to a company headed by Biden's business partner, Devin Archer. The company, called Rosemont Seneca Bohai LLC, between April 2014 and November 2015. Every month during that 18-month period, the records show two payments of $83,333 for consulting services, which sources say were intended for Archer and Biden. One of the sources also said that in their investigations of Burisma, prosecutors obtained payment records which showed activities prior to when Archer and Biden were appointed to the board. According to Reuters, Biden never visited Ukraine while working for Burisma, although he did attend the biannual company meetings, all of which were held outside Ukraine. Biden's involvement with Burisma has come under intense scrutiny after President Donald Trump allegedly asked Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to investigate Biden and his father, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. Trump alleges Joe Biden used his clout as vice president to help his son in Ukraine. The Bidens, of course, deny any wrongdoing. I think that's interesting. They deny any wrongdoing, even though we have creepy Uncle Joe on videotape bragging about stopping that investigation and having that investigator, that member of the government, fired. He's actually said so. So Hunter Biden made a lot more, to the tune of over $83,000 a month for quite some time. For, what was it, 18 months? So there was $3.4 million in payments. That amounts to, that's to the both of them, okay? Because each of them was getting $83,333 per month for consulting services. That comes up to $1.7 million each. So Hunter Biden was paid in total nearly $2 million for consulting services for being on the board of Burisma. And his entire reason for being there was, and I'll say this again, quote, to protect the company at a time when it faced potential criminal prosecution. He was hired as a helpful non-executive director with a powerful name. Because this guy, this Mykola Zlochevsky, the former Ukrainian Minister of Natural Resources who founded Burisma, was under investigation for corruption, tax violations, and money laundering. And that's why Hunter Biden was there. He was there because of his name and his connections to the second most powerful person in the United States of America. He was there to protect a corrupt company. And he was paid $1.7 million for doing so. This is the kind of corruption. This is the kind of shenanigans, I'll just call it that, that goes on in government when we don't pay attention to what government's doing. It's extremely, extremely important. It's vital that all of us who go to the polling places and cast our votes every time we elect people, it's so important for us to keep one eye on these people after we put them in office. Because if we don't, corruption will strike. It does so frequently. This is why I keep referring to Washington, D.C. as a den of corruption and evil. And I keep referring to professional lifetime politicians as criminals. Because there's no other way to define what this story is talking about. That's criminal activity. Protecting someone who is corrupt. And using us, you and I, using us, the United States of America, to do it. These people should be spending the rest of their lives locked up. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, driving the big bus of absurdity down the highway of life. It's the Monday edition of the program. Good to have you along today. Hope you're having a great day today. Hey, if you're one who just drops in and takes a listen every now and then, you know, going to the website, pulling up the player and recording, you know you can't have this delivered to your inbox every day or to your mobile device. Yeah, if you have Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, if you have the iHeartRadio app or you're on Spotify, all you have to do is look up The Daily Perspective and subscribe. It's there. Have it sent to you. Delivery charges are free. Do that today, why don't you? Okay, back to business as weird. Mitt Romney has been a thorn in the side of real conservative people for a while now. And that's because he's behaving more like a progressive from time to time than he is like a conservative guy. Now, he puts on the guise of conservatism and is just points his finger of righteous indignation at Donald Trump and accuses him of not being truly conservative and participating in criminal activities and the like. And no. There's just something not quite right about Mitt Romney. And in case you had any doubts about how much he loathes Donald Trump, the Chicks on the Right has an article today, which it's a pretty much everywhere now, but I just stumbled across this and I like their version of it. And they're saying, if you had any doubts about how much he hates Trump, this should wipe your doubts out. Mitt Romney was recently profiled by The Atlantic, and in that interview, he said he had a Twitter burner account, only he didn't use that term. He's probably never heard the term burner. Instead, this is how he described it. He explained that he uses a secret Twitter account. Quote, what do they call me? A lurker, he says, to keep tabs on the political conversation. I won't give you the name of it, he says, but I'm following 668 people. Swiping at his tablet, he recited some of the accounts he follows, including journalists, late night comedians, and athletes. Apparently, Mitt isn't aware of the lengths internet sleuths will go to when they're given a carrot of this magnitude. It only took a few hours for Slate to find his lurker account. And you guys, he used the name Pierre Delecto. I guess he used Pierre Delecto because Carlos Danger was taken. That account has now been made private, but there are screenshots of it all over the place. Oh my gosh. When the Atlantic interviewer heard the Slate news, they they reached back out to Mitt Romney, confirm, in fact, that he was Pierre Delecto. His response, c'est moi, which I can tell you from my years in French language classes in the middle school means it's me. You guys, Mitt Romney is basically the new Carlos Danger. Oh my gosh. Pierre Delecto. You just can't make the best stuff up. You know what I mean? Oh gosh. Where was I going? I had someplace actually serious that I was going after that. Oh yeah. This is where it was. The fight for 15 has been going on for quite some time now. It seems like it's been going on forever, with people screaming and yelling and demanding that they get paid $15 an hour. And of course, you and I both know, as rational, reasonable, honest people, we know in the real world that when you raise wages, you have to offset that cash flow in some way. That as a business person, you have to cut somewhere or generate more revenue in order to pay for the increase in your business cost by increasing wages. And that means if you're selling products or doing services, you will probably be increasing the price of what you sell or what you do. Or maybe also you may, in combination with that, reduce hours for employees. I remember when I was a kid, one of my first jobs, I was a busboy at a steak place, a steak restaurant. I don't know if you remember the Bonanza Steakhouses, but when I was in high school, I had a job as a busboy. Started out as a busboy, but ended up working on the line and other things. But I started out as a busboy at Bonanza. And during that time I was with Bonanza, the minimum wage went up. It went up, I think it went up from like a, it was back then it was $1.65 an hour. I think it went to $1.75. I think that's what it was. I think it went up 10 cents. And everybody was, yes, until we saw the schedule the next day and everybody's hours had been rearranged. The people who had been there the longest, the people with the most in seniority, got more hours. And those of us on the bottom rungs got our hours cut. Because those people who had been there the longest were on the path. You know, they were on that path to advancement. And those of us who were just starting out, not so much. So we lost money in the process. The pay went up. The wages went up. And our pay dropped. And that's exactly what's happened to Target employees. Yep, Target employees. And this is what people like Vermont Senator and presidential candidate Bernie Sanders and New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez just don't get. People who run businesses and are successful did not become successful by not being wise in their decision making. When you insist that the minimum wage has to be raised and you codify that into law, then one of three things is going to happen. The employers are either going to start charging the customers more for products and services, which would negate the raise that those same people were given, or they're going to start cutting staff, which would mean that rather than their old minimum wage, they now don't get anything. Or there's option three, they cut the hours the employees work, which causes them to make less income, which means they were better off before. I forgot about that cutting staff option when I was prefacing the story, because that's absolutely true as well. That happens all the time. When cash flow changes, staff gets cut. This is not tough math. You could be a fifth grader and reason that one of these three things is going to happen in that scenario. And for some employees at Target, that reality is starting to take shape, and they don't like what their new minimum wage has brought to them. 2 years ago, Target said it would raise its minimum wage to $15 an hour by the end of 2020. The move won praise from labor advocates and put pressure on other companies to also move to $15 an hour. But some store workers say the wage increases are not helping because their hours are falling, making it difficult to keep their health insurance and in some cases to pay their bills. CNN Business interviewed 23 current and former Target employees in recent months, including department managers, who say their hours have been scaled back even as Target has increased starting wages. Many of these workers say the cuts, which come as Target's business is in its strongest position in more than a decade, have hurt them financially. CNN Business agreed to withhold the last names of several of the current employees and the city where their store is located so they could speak freely. One employee named Heather said, "I got that dollar raise, but I'm getting $200 less in my paycheck. I have no idea how I'm going to pay rent or buy food." An employee named Karen said, "The Target worked me hard from mid-July of 2018 to February 2019, right before my medical coverage was about to kick in. They cut my hours right then. And so I begged for hours and always went above and beyond. And that led her to quit." She said, "I called in on May 1st and said, 'I can't come in today or ever again because I can't afford my daughter's daycare. You guys cut me really bad.'" Another employee, a veteran named Michael, said that Target cut him off right before he would get medical benefits, which is something else that happens when the minimum wage is increased. He says, "I'm hoping going to Christmas will keep me at the average needed for health insurance, but at this rate, who knows?" So, once again, another example of the folly of the fight for 15. We have seen this again and again. We know that in San Francisco, when they mandated the hourly wage be increased, businesses closed. Small businesses, restaurants, closed because they could not afford to pay their employees $15 an hour. They could not charge enough to offset the difference. They would run business off if they charged that much. There was no way they could stay open. And now we see the other examples. And workers at Target are learning a little real life lesson about economics and about how business really works and what the real results of government meddling in the private sector usually result in. And that is the opposite of what they promise you will happen. It happens every time the government wades in. This is the Daily Perspective, diving into the final segment of today's edition. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, Monday through Friday, right here on Facebook Live at 9 o'clock, 8 a.m. Central. Just look for the Daily Perspective podcast. And also, the podcast itself, available through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio, the iHeartRadio app as well. Let's see, one more thing to wrap up with. There's a story that has hit over the last couple of days about deep state diplomats that are caught up in the Trump impeachment, and they're fighting back. And this is coming to us from the Washington Times. By the way, just as an aside here, I on the show notes every day, I post links to all of these stories. And there are a couple of websites which will let you see their content X number of times before they just block it and make you pay. So they've erected they tease you, but they're really behind a paywall. And if you want to pay for those, that's fine. I would suggest that you, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. But there are other browsers besides, besides what comes with your computer or comes with your mobile device that will allow you a private session that doesn't track cookies and things like that. And you can prevent them from counting you down. I'll just say that. Yes, that's seems to be working so far. But this is coming from Washington Times. Washington Times is one of those sites. The other one is... The Daily Wire has started doing that now, too. 3 years of simmering frustration inside the State Department is boiling over on Capitol Hill as a parade of current and former diplomats testify of their concerns about the Trump administration's unorthodox policy towards Ukraine. I have to break here. Now, the policy is only unorthodox because it isn't business as usual for Washington, D.C. I'll just say that. Over White House objections, the diplomats are appearing before impeachment investigators looking into President Donald Trump's dealings with Ukraine, and they're recounting stories of possible impropriety, misconduct, and mistreatment by their superiors. To Trump and his allies, the diplomats are evidence of a deep state within the government that has been out to get him from the start. But to the employees of a department demoralized by the administration's repeated attempts to slash its budget and staff, this is important, okay? Listen up. A department demoralized by the administration's repeated attempts to slash its budget and staff, cooperating with the inquiry is seen as a moment of catharsis, an opportunity to reassert the foreign policy norms they believe Trump has blown past. A moment of catharsis, is it? So, this is a time for them to vent, to get things off their chest, to vent their spleen, to reassert the foreign policy norms, the business as usual, as I said before. Ronald Newman, president of the American Academy of Diplomacy, says, "It's taken a while to understand just how weird the policy process has become, but it was inevitable." The group wrote a letter last month calling for the administration to support career diplomats, and protect them from politicization. Make a mental note, career diplomats. The State Department officials parading through Capitol Hill include high-ranking diplomats with decades of experience. Here's another one. Decades of experience. Serving both Republican and Democratic administrations. Among them, Kurt Volker, who resigned as the administration's special envoy to Ukraine after being named in the whistleblower complaint that jump-started the impeachment inquiry. By the way, another aside, the whistleblower complaint, based on hearsay, no support in reality, and I don't know if you've noticed, but all of a sudden that has just sort of disappeared in the wind like dust. Have you noticed any stories about the whistleblower in the last few days? Have you? Others who have testified behind closed doors include Marie Yovanovitch, the former ambassador to Ukraine, who was pushed out of the post after a concerted campaign by Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. Michael McKinley, who resigned after 37 years in the Foreign Service, in part over treatment of Yovanovitch. And Fiona Hill, a National Security Council staffer who worked closely with the former Ukrainian ambassador. Volker told investigators he did not believe there was anything improper in his dealings in Ukraine. But the others have all spoken of their unease and concern about Trump's approach to Ukraine, and their testimony has largely corroborated the whistleblower's complaint, which centered on a July phone call between Trump and Ukraine's leader, as well as Giuliani's dealings in the former Republic of the Soviet Republic. I have to sidebar here, sidestep, and remind you that if they're corroborating the whistleblower's complaint, that's problematic, because that corroboration cannot be based on reality, because the whistleblower was not in the room when what he is complaining about happened. He made his whistleblower's complaint based on hearsay. And these people are corroborating hearsay. Office gossip, basically. And these names, Marie Yovanovitch, the former ambassador to Ukraine. Who was she appointed by? She was an Obama operative. Just go back and look at these people. Yovanovitch, who remains a State Department employee, said she was incredulous at being recalled early from her post, despite having been told she did nothing wrong. She lamented that her experience is evidence that American diplomats can no longer count on support from their government if they're attacked by foreign interests. She said, according to the text of her opening statement to lawmakers, that basic understanding no longer holds true. Today we see the State Department attacked and hollowed out from within. McKinley said he was disturbed by the implication that foreign governments were being approached to procure negative information on political opponents. The fact that he actually said this is disturbing, because in reality, this is not unusual for a president. It's just that This is kind of part of the sausage-making process. Nobody really looks into what presidents do when they're dealings with other leaders of other countries, but asking each other reciprocally for favors is common. Hey, can you help me out with something here? Apparently, your predecessor and his organization there were involved in some corruption. You're well aware of that. That's how you became the president, because you exposed it, right? I need you to help me look into something that ties back to something here. Is that unreasonable? No, it's not. Trump has long cast career government officials as part of the, quote, deep state, end quote. I put it that way because that's the way it is in the article. Out to undermine him, associating the officials' service under Democratic administrations as signs of their political leanings. That's despite the fact that most longtime career officials have served under both Republicans and Democrats. Okay, this article goes on for much longer, but that's as far as I'm going to go. Let me just say, it doesn't matter. Actually, it does matter that they have served under both Republicans and Democrats, because that says they've been entrenched in their positions for quite some time. It doesn't mean they're trustworthy. It doesn't mean they're good at what they do. It just means they've been there for a long time. Why have they been there for a long time? Because they have a government job. That's why they've been there for a long time. You and I both know that when you're dealing with a government agency, you quite often deal with someone who's been there for decades and they're bad at what they do. Why? Because a union protects them. And they're complaining about a department being hollowed out from within. Well, that's a campaign promise. He's whittling down the size of the government. He's eliminating the dead wood. He's getting rid of the unnecessary people. And in some cases, he's wiping out the corruption in the departments. Laura Ingraham said Republicans in the Congress should be asked, why have you allowed the State Department to become an arm of the Democratic Party? And what are you going to do about it? Dinesh D'Souza said, time to clean these people out. Fire them, demote them, transfer them to remote outposts, ignore them, demoralize them, and ultimately they'll recognize the pointlessness of their careers and quit. It is time for them to go. And it's time for me to go. And I'll see you tomorrow. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.